Storyworthy Media, the best in story-driven content.
Hi, this is Susanna Brisk. I'm a writer, comedian, and sexual intuitive, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Celery Hall Dormitories at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, Wisconsin.
We're in a dormitory.
Yes, because this is where I lost my virginity.
Really? So you lost your virginity in college?
Yes, in college. Don't make fun of me.
I think that's actually a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well, but you're a girl.
All right, we're talking about sex tonight, ladies and gentlemen, because our guest, Susanna Brisk, she is a writer and a comedian, and she has a very popular blog called Malibu Mom. Are you familiar with this, honey?
Oh, sure.
Malibu Mom. Susanna is just amazing, and she has parlayed all of these stories that she has and all of this information that she has on being a very sexual person into a new career as a sexual intuitive.
Yes.
What does that mean?
I don't know. She will have to explain it to us. I'm not sure what a sexual intuitive is. I could intuit.
Wait, hang on.
Not a word.
You could intuit.
What is the verb version of intuitive?
Intuit.
See.
Well, if you go over to sexual
intuitive, get it? It's like you, sex.
If you go over to sexualintuitive.com, she'll explain a little bit there
what she does. Good. Thank goodness.
But I'm trying to figure it out. Like, I mean, I know Susanna because I've seen a lot of her storytelling around town, and she's been on the Storyworthy podcast at least once, maybe twice before. She's done the Storyworthy Hour of Truth. I know she's like a very sexual person because she can talk very easily about sex. I'm not kidding. I've heard her talk about having not just multiple orgasms.
Mm-hmm.
Dozens of orgasms in one sitting or one lie.
Well, I'm used to hearing women say that. I don't think it's just an unusual thing.
Yeah. The thing with Susanna, I think a lot of the time she's by herself. I mean, I'm not sure how
that's
this is
really
accomplished.
Isn't that just for the best?
Well, I'm just not sure how it's all accomplished, so I'm anxious
well,
to
we'll have
hear
to
about
get
her.
You up to at least.
We're gonna
what's
get
the most orgasms you ever had? You opened this can of worms.
I would say five.
In
which
one
is a good
session.
Amount. Yeah, which is a good amount.
That's pretty good.
I think so.
See, men don't understand the concept, and I literally don't understand the concept because, of course, we have one orgasm, take
and
a nap, watch SportsCenter, eat some ham,
right.
And then you're back. Depending how old you are, depends on how soon you're back. But it's
right.
Like even if you were in Viagra, there would still be a sizable period of time in between actual orgasms.
Refractory period.
No, wait, she's shaking her head. We'll get into that later then.
But is that, I mean, in other words, like a man can stay hard, but when he has an orgasm, we're talking about an ejaculate.
Yeah, exactly. It's very specific. Whereas when you're saying you have an orgasm, it's like, does that, you mean you felt really good five individual times or were all five the same?
Well, usually the first one is stronger. It just depends. You know, it just depends. But, I mean, it's exciting. But I want to know what she's talking about with dozens. That's what I want to know. So
I believe she does have a video presentation.
Well,
it's a PowerPoint.
As a sexual intuitive, she's going to be meeting with single people, and she meets with couples. She has them fill out a questionnaire.
Yes.
I don't know what the questionnaire looks like. And then she does, like, a Skype session with them. And then she does, like, some confidential counseling. And then she does like a follow-up. So, I mean, I'm just not exactly sure.
Counseling them on what they can do to improve
their sexual life. I don't know. I appreciate that she's trying to bring more orgasms to the world. And
well,
I can get behind that. Now, here's something.
I think
something.
We can all get behind that.
If you
get behind.
Now, here's something.
In-N-Out Burger.
There are five types of having like an intuitive experience that you might encounter, okay, that will teach you about love relationships. There are five things because I've been looking into
this. All right, let's
hear it. For instance, body signals, right? So you're with somebody and they're giving you different body signals to maybe get your attention. So maybe you feel like goosebumps or something, or something rings true. The hair on the back of your neck maybe stands up. You know, something piques your interest in your body signals. right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's something else that might happen if you are, in fact, having an intuitive experience. If you are with somebody and you see them after a period of time or whatever, and you experience deja vu with that person. So all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, I know you. Have I seen you before? Have I met you before? That kind of thing. So you've got an experience like that. That might lead to something. Here's another thing that might be intuitive. If you feel in sync with somebody, like a synchronicity going on, like you have like perfect.
Like I meet somebody and go, I hate in sync. Do you hate in sync?
Or like a song comes on the radio and it's like, oh my gosh, I love this and I love this. Wait a minute, I was going to say that. I was going to say that. So there's something that, you know, like there's something that might pique your interest.
Yes.
Okay? Synchronicity. So far we've got deja vu, body signals, synchronicities. How about this? When you have an ability to see beyond, right? So like
I don't know what you mean by that.
Okay, so like this is when you're tuned into an event that's happening like right now, but you're in a different place. For example, like you're thinking of somebody you used to go out with and all of a sudden they text you. Like something happens, like you're thinking about something and then it happens. So it's like somehow you're foreseeing how something might turn out.
Okay. I'm not a very metaphysical person.
Well, when two people are like really clicking, like if two people are clicking, having intuitive flashes like how they're about how that person's feeling or about where they might want to live.
So a specific
it's like
person,
you're seeing beyond. Like you're looking at them and you're like, I don't know. I kind of see you in a different place. I don't see you here. And then they look at you and they think that's funny because
that's
I was
how relationships
of you.
End. You look at the other person and you go, I don't see you here
anymore. I see you on the other side of the
door. I see you somewhere else. You and you're fucking chewing the way you chew corn. Just swallow it.
All right. Here's the last way that you can really pick up on somebody and you might be sexually intuitive is if you have an intuitive empathy toward that person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you might sense that person is lonely. You might sense that they're angry. But you might be able to, you know, pull it out of them. Like if I'm going out with somebody and I sense they had a bad day or they're tense about something, I can intuitively ask them, you know, like, hey, it seems like you're really, you're having a bad day and get them to talk. So these are just like little cues that are intuitive. This is what I know about sexually intuitive. But what do I know?
That explains a lot.
which exactly explains a whole lot, doesn't it? But Susanna Brisk, she's going to have more information because she's been around the block, Hannes.
You mean that in the best possible sense.
Of course I mean that in the best possible sense. Yes. What other sense could there be? She knows about orgasms. I know that.
Well, good. Orgasms are those kind of things that everybody thinks they know what they're talking about. But they're not. Like, you know, you meet people and they say, hey, let me tell you a joke. Oh, you're a comedian. Let me tell you a joke. And it turns out, like, they have no concept of... Everybody thinks they can tell a joke. Everybody thinks they can have a proper orgasm. I'm betting this isn't true.
Wow. I don't know, Hannes. I mean, I think it's very personal. It's like a sneeze, you know? Like, you feel a sneeze coming on, you sneeze. Is it a good sneeze or a bad sneeze?
A sneeze that leads directly to an orgasm is always, that's the best sneeze there is.
No, but I mean like...
During hay fever season, I'm coming like a maniac.
That's how I always like think I'll explain orgasms to my daughter someday. I'll say, it's like a sneeze. It's like this thing, you just got to get it out.
Okay, just don't tell her that. That's going to mess her up. First of all, I think of your daughter as my niece. So she's going to become a nun.
Okay, what do we tell her? What do we tell
her? I'm not telling her nothing. You leave me out of it. But for God's sakes, don't tell her it's like a sneeze.
Well, I mean, just in terms of what it actually feels like, in terms of the satisfaction.
It feels like a sneeze to you? This is what I meant. People think they know what they're talking about. I've never sneezed and been like, oh, yeah.
I just mean the release. I just mean the release. That's all I mean.
Yeah. I don't know. The sneeze. Anything else? Maybe a cough?
Susanna Brisk is going to have a deep hacking cough.
A multiple orgasm is like a deep hacking cough when you have a lot of phlegm in your lungs.
All right, listen. We got a great...
It's like a bronchial infection.
We have a great storyteller coming up, but I did want to remind you guys that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, we would appreciate it.
Yes, we would.
Now, we've been going over 5 years now, Hannes.
Please send us recordings of your orgasm.
Don't do that. But we always invite your emails at info@storyworthymedia.com or info@storyworthypodcast.com. The point is we've been getting a lot of emails, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly.
I enjoy
people
getting emails.
Doing the feedback,
yeah, I
as
like
they
the
say.
Feedback.
They will write a pretty long email, which surprises me. Like,
and I always respond.
You always respond.
Always.
You will forward some to me, and I will go, I'll think about responding, and then I'll decide not to.
I don't know why that is, Hannes. All you got to do is shoot back a quick email and just say, hey, thanks for writing.
You've only sent me one. Actually, you texted it to me, so I couldn't. That was like, Hannes is right, and he was awesome, and I think just like him, and that was great. And then the other ones were like, Hannes is a racist. Hannes is an asshole. And I'm like, I'm not going to argue this guy out of it.
But even if they say that, all you do is you take the time to write back, we always appreciate your comments. Thanks so much. Continue listening. And if you get a chance, leave us a nice comment on iTunes.
If I bothered to write somebody and tell them that I thought they were a bad person and they wrote back, we appreciate your comments, be like, well, he didn't fucking read it. And now I really hate him.
Listen, I will always write back to our fans. And so consider
I just want people to forget me.
Also, remember, folks, to follow us on Twitter and Instagram @Storyworthy. And if you head over to storyworthymedia.com, you can pick up my book, Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life. It's also available on Amazon, Kindle, and, of course, the audiobook. How could I not do the audiobook? Do you know what
I
mean, Hannes?
Right, exactly.
My money is made with this mouth.
Wow.
And this has nothing to do with being a sexual intuitive.
Apparently not. Not from what I hear.
All right, you guys.
That's a different book, My Hoary-Worthy Life. Come on. That's pretty good fun.
All right, you guys. Whoever you are, stick around because Susanna Brisk is on her way. Next time on Storyworthy, we have comedian Bronston Jones.
And I'll be talking about the homeless people who live in my neighborhood.
That's next time on Storyworthy. Hey, Christine, tell everybody about our social media consulting business.
Well, Hannes, we have learned so much over the last 5 years doing Storyworthy about social media, and we've had so many guests on the show that have given us their tips and ideas.
Yeah.
And so now we are sharing our experience with others. We've started a new social media consulting business, and if you email us at info@storyworthypodcast.com, I'll be happy to fill you in on exactly what we're able to do for you.
Yeah, we can increase your social media footprint.
Exactly.
Footprint.
Exactly.
Footprint!
Again, email us over at info@storyworthypodcast.com and I'll be happy to email you a rate sheet.
Hey, this is Brent Tobler. Listen to Storyworthy or I will come to your house and I will murder you. I literally will. That's how much I love this show. So don't make me. I am not joking. Murder. Not your family, not your pets. I love all of them, but you, the bird, you can hear me. I will come murder you.
And we're back. We have left the dormitory and walked about 5 blocks over to the Memorial Union overlooking beautiful Lake Mendota.
And what did you do in the student union?
I told people that I lost my virginity.
You told us, what do you mean?
No, I just wander up to people and then, no, I just saw a friend of mine. I was like, dude.
What's happening?
What?
What do you do at the student union?
Drink.
Oh, no, really? They had alcohol in your student union?
Yeah, it's Wisconsin. What do you think?
In our student union, here's what I remember about our student union. That's where all the credit card companies would set up, and they would try to get the students, like around graduation time, to get their first credit cards. I'll never forget, you could go table to table and get a credit card. So now you've got 5 T-shirts, but you're also
creating debt in our economy.
You have potential debt of up to like $50,000 now, and you have no job. You're in college.
Yeah.
That's what I remember taking part.
And this has brought the economy to its knees. No, our Memorial Union was a beautiful old building, restaurant and a patio right on the lake. Fantastic. And, of course, there was beer. It's Wisconsin.
All right. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Look, there's 3 taps in a Wisconsin bathroom. There's cold, there's hot, and there's Pabst.
That's pretty funny, man. All right, you guys, Susanna Brisk is here right now. She's a writer and a comedian, and she's the author of the book, I'll Be the Death of Me. She also has a very popular blog, like I mentioned, called Malibu Mom. I mean, her writing is just stunning, Hannes. It's truly, truly...
It causes me to sneeze every
very,
time
very,
I
very
read
good.
It.
And now she has this new project, like I mentioned. She is a sexual intuitive. What that is, I don't know.
We shall find out.
We're going to find out. You can find her over at MalibuMom.com and also at SexualIntuitive.com and on Twitter @MalibuMom1. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Susanna Brisk.
When I was 7 years old, I asked a girl who was a family friend to spank me. I unscrewed an elongated wooden block off my IKEA bookshelf and handed it to her. I did not know the word kinky. I had not yet kissed a boy, though it wouldn't be long before I did a year later at age 8. But I knew enough to choose this particular family friend because her dad spanked her, so I figured she would want to take her revenge out on me so we would both get our needs met. Long before I ever trademarked the term, this was already the markings of a sexual intuitive. She took the slightly rounded pine offering, I'm not a total masochist, and looked at me, bemused. I stared her down emphatically. I was older and knew how to dominate. In fact, I was doing what in BDSM terms is called topping from the bottom, when you're supposedly in a submissive position but still ordering around the person supposed to be dominating you, but I didn't know that yet either. I lay face down on my twin bed and waited. I could hear our respective Russian families whooping it up downstairs, drunk and oblivious to the hedonism going on under the same roof. Amateurs. Anticipation built inside me like a shaken up can of Coke had I been allowed to drink it. I waited. I glanced behind me. My friend raised the block and hit me on the butt, gingerly. Harder, I instructed. She raised the plank and tried to muster some anger or at least courage. She set it down on my ass and left it there. I can't, she said. It was the first and last time I ever read a sexual situation wrong, but to my credit, I was only 7. And I don't think she's mad at me because we're still Facebook friends. It would be decades before I figured out what it was I was blessed with and how I was going to use it for anything more than picking people to fool around with. And first, I had to get out of Orthodox Jewish day school. I was halfway through the high school for girls when I methodically set about losing my accursed virginity. I had chosen this school over a scholarship at a Catholic girls' school because it was mercifully atheist. Here I was being taught to worship the dual deities of intellect and hard work, and yet my flesh was crawling with the desire for old-fashioned Judeo-Christian sin. I had skipped a grade at school and was a year or two younger than everyone in 11th grade, but I still felt a massive internal drive to consummate. The body had only recently become even remotely adult, but the spirit had clearly been willing. We were working on 2 plays with our brother boys' school. Mine was a farce on Shakespeare, Arthur, and medieval England called Knights of the Square Table, and my character's name was Lady Crumpet. The other play was a dramatized collection of the poems of Dylan Thomas. I was glad I'd landed in the comedy. That Welsh alcoholic was fucking depressing, and I was already depressed enough. After our first rehearsal, I met Bryn, who was coincidentally also a Welsh alcoholic, though at 15 only a baby alky. He was in the drama, and I wanted him, despite/because my new best friend Sonia had wanted him first. I knew this without Sonia ever telling me as much, once again the mark of a fledgling sexual intuitive. I don't think she's mad at me either, at least not on Facebook. Bryn and I would make out after rehearsal at the train station between our 2 schools that were on both his and my train line home. We did this for as long as we could before it got too dark to come home without a plausible excuse. We let many trains go by without even looking up. It was a delicious teasing, as we could never go further than kissing with tongues, which in Australian lingo is called pashing. There was always a hint of danger. Not only was it completely illegal to pash in school uniform, mate, but also, if we were reported for smoking cigarettes and flicking them off the platform, we could be suspended or expelled. If I could have rolled up Bryn and smoked him, I would have. I originally had a crush on Bryn's friend Steve, a shaggy, affable puppy of a guy who gazed at me with adoring eyes and looked as if he would faint every time I was near, but I had a sense he wouldn't be as hot in the sack. Bryn peered at me from under thick black hair that swept onto his forehead in uncontemplated bangs and smiled, revealing teeth like perfectly white chiclets. Not that my parents let me eat candy in case I got diabetes like my grandmother. I knew that he was the one who would have to do the deed, and as Lady Macbeth, as opposed to Lady Crumpet, once said, "Woots that it were done quickly." My respite from the overprotective rents came at my new BFF Sonia's house. Her mom was that oxymoron, a Jewish mom who wasn't overprotective, and we came to Sonia's before and after a big night or simply hung out smoking weed in her bedroom while her mom was out on dates. I always left my house with no makeup on, but once I got to Sonia's, I would use my mother's old Mary Kay compacts to paint on thick black raccoon eyes. My father was horrified at what I was wearing when I left. "You forgot to put on a skirt," he would say, as I sashayed over to my mother, ready for her to drive me to Sonia's. The driving age in Australia is 18, so I needed to be nice to that bitch so she could drive me to my dates with debauchery. One night, while all her friends were running around Sonia's backyard in the grips of an acid trip, I stayed inside with Bryn. I hadn't tried acid yet, I was saving it. But what was going on here was just as intoxicating. It was the first time we went on a train platform, so he reached up under my skirt and started working on me. I had my first orgasm on Sonia's bed. It was like a scene from Tommy, the pinball musical, all the lights, bells, and whistle without the creepy deaf-mute thing. I thought I was going to die, just lose my life right then and there while Electric Ladyland played on the record player. We were totally doing the 70s in the 80s. Then I reached into Bryn's pants and touched what was in there, right on Sonia's bed, reaping his fruit instead of her. It gave me an illicit thrill. In the years since, I've become more of a girl's girl, but no less prone to the perverse. Bryn's penis was the first one I had ever felt, but by his groans, I knew it wouldn't be the last. Power at last. I was drunker on it than on the bourbon swimming in my bloodstream. I wasn't sure how he stacked up against the rest of his gender, but now I could guess why his nickname was the Donk. Far from being afraid at the prospect of accommodating such a prodigious weapon, I began making plans for the deflowering, and on the night of the play, I had no stage fright, even about the act I knew that would take place at the after party. My killer line as Lady Crumpet was, "Who knows what goes on in men's pointed heads?" I felt a huge laugh come back at me from the crowd, and it was the greatest drug I'd ever tried, but then again, I hadn't had sex yet. Theater felt completely natural. My only sadness was that it was all over so fast. Also, perhaps a foreshadowing about teenage fucking. I bid my parents goodbye in the back of the boys' school auditorium and headed to the party, wondering if I would look any different when I got home in the morning, dehymenated. By the time we got to the party, people were already plastered. Most of them didn't look familiar, or even as if they were in high school. In fact, many of them looked like they'd never been to high school. I don't remember what I smoked or drank, but I know that I was wasted enough to pull Bryn into an adjoining bedroom and pull him on top of me on the bed, topping from the bottom again. I almost chickened out at the last minute when Bryn sat back on his naked haunches, surveyed me, and leaned over to fumble in the pocket of his discarded jeans. "What are you doing?" I slurred. "I'm protecting you, baby," he murmured, taking out a small plastic packet and ripping it open with those chiclet teeth so that we didn't get AIDS. While I knew about pregnancy and STDs, with the music we listened to, it might have been the decade of free love. In real love, this was the 80s, and at that point, it was all about the AIDS. The actual consummation didn't last long, but it also didn't hurt, as I kind of knew it wouldn't. But I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it, because the sluts at school had told me the first time hurt like hell, and the times were after that weren't much better. But then, I had no shame issues about sex and had been fantasizing about way out shit since I was 7. Also, the only person who had ever sexually abused me was me. Except that one time I tried to get our Persian cat to lick my pussy, but we don't have to talk about that. Bryn gazed into my eyes and held me afterwards as if I were the only person on the planet. In the morning, I woke up to find him gone. I wandered out of the bedroom feeling like crap and probably looking pretty good as a 15-year-old girl with a smudged mascara under her eyes and a roaring hangover can still pull off a certain elan. I tiptoed around randomly scattered bodies who looked as if they had tripped over and fallen asleep wherever they had been the night before, and finally came upon Bryn, who was talking to Sarah Licata. She had been in his section of the play, the maudlin Dylan Thomas one, and I had an immediate intuition that he had already slept with her but ignored it, as there was no reason to think so. We had both been virgins, hadn't we? Exactly 4 weeks later, a shame-faced Bryn confessed that I had not been his first, as he had claimed. He had already done it with two other girls, one of them the aforementioned Sarah Licata. In fact, he had gone off to fuck her right after I'd fallen asleep in his arms. I was hurt, but my sexual intuition was not surprised. Thank God for condoms. Ah, teen love. I broke up with Bryn so he could be with Sarah. Then I dated his friend Jay, who had a girlfriend he eventually impregnated. Then I pashed the original crush Steve, then Tom, Dick, and Harry, not their real names. Thank God for condoms. At one point, a kid from the boys' high school came up to me at the train station. He had light red hair, and I thought he liked me, so I talked to him, although he had kind of a weird vibe. Apropos of nothing, he said, "Why are you such a slut?" I walked away from him, my heart pounding, but I was resolute. I wasn't going to let him see me sweat. Why wasn't there a word for a promiscuous boy, I wondered. Calling a boy Casanova, Don Juan, or even James Bond didn't seem as insulting. Despite the loaded dice, I figured I'd better cast my sexual net further offshore. If I kept it to just one school, my exes were going to be able to start their own after-school club right after chess. Last I heard, Bryn had taken too many magic mushrooms and headed up north to Queensland, never to be heard from again. Years later, I changed his name in my book, even though as I was writing it, I had a strong feeling that he was no longer alive. A few months ago, a random Facebook post and subsequent reconnect confirmed that he had died in an unexplained solo car accident about 6 years before, just as I was writing the book. That sexual intuitive gift was already there, but that pesky monogamous marriage kind of slowed me down. I met my future ex-husband in New York City when I was 23 and he was 37, and we had a great relationship. For at least a decade, our sexual proclivities dovetailed perfectly, and though it's unlike me, I shan't kiss and tell. All was ostensibly at least okay until what I would call the awakening, a term I have not trademarked, but that I would nevertheless call awakening gate. It is a story told throughout the ages. Girl meets boy at bar, girls leaves husband of 14 years for him the next day. Or at least that's my story. Almost 3 years after the dust has settled back onto my nethers, I have to admit this fact to myself. I left my husband for a guy I met in a bar on Halloween when I was dressed as Marilyn Monroe. And he was dressed as Bret Michaels from Poison. So clearly we had to cross the bounds of time and good taste to be together. It's always important to start a relationship in reality with mutual interests, compatible lives, and real communication. In this case, our greatest and most abiding mutual interest was his penis. Once again, as with Bryn, it all starts with costumes and ends with my feet in invisible stirrups. Sometimes you meet a person and the chemistry is so intense, you are sure someone has implanted a microchip in your body, generating it with a remote control, but I'm not that paranoid. For my blog, I once tried out something called an electro wand, a fun BDSM toy that emits a low-voltage electrical charge. Once again, science brings you that spark in your relationship you've been missing. It was the same charge I felt on my skin with Halloween Guy, without any electrical input, but it was also the electricity I felt with my ex-husband for at least a decade, so relatively speaking, we outsmarted science for a long time. My exes, the human sockets. Over the last 3 years, though, I have come to understand that while my untrammeled sexual powers are a ton of fun, they must also be treated with respect. The superpowers I have developed come with a great deal of responsibility. Do you want to know what they are?
Yes.
Well, okay then. I have not had one disappointing sexual encounter, as I have an uncanny knack of choosing people who I am incredibly insanely compatible with, at least in bed. I am not just highly orgasmic, I can come from kissing someone. I can come without touching myself. Or I can come simply from reading a text. This may not be as much fun as it sounds. Sometimes that makes things difficult, especially texting and driving, which becomes particularly inadvisable. At the same time as I have cracked open, here is what I have learned. We humans are comprised of a physical body and an energy body. If you don't believe me, it doesn't matter. It's science. The existence of the energy body has been scientifically proven beyond the idea of chakras or energy centers, but as an actual force field. If you are an intuitive-based person, you didn't need the proof. You believed that hocus-pocus mumbo-jumbo from the beginning because of how the hair on the back of your neck stood up when you saw that one particular dude who seemed altogether pleasant. Your physical body said, oh, there's a handsome fellow, but your energy body said, nope. You may have gone ahead and gotten involved with that person anyway, in business or bed, and lived to regret it. You may call it intuition, a sixth sense, a feeling, but some of us are better at listening to it than others. The question is, what happens when the physical body and the energy body are at odds? This is especially so with sex. Of course it is. Sex is a microcosm of all personal paradigms, a pathway into emotional wellness, a journey into the soul, and an opportunity to get closer to the divine in yourself and others. What is so frustrating to this sex aficionado is when both bodies do not align on a particular subject. Heartbreaking, in fact. In the past, it has been my energy body that wanted to be with someone and the physical body would not cooperate. Consider as evidence someone I dated after the guy I appeared to leave the marriage for who happened to have long-term kidney problems. I was crazy about him. Intellectually and culturally, we were a great fit, but he was being emotionally withholding throughout most of the relationship, and I was telling myself I could handle it. However, my physical body wasn't having any of it. After about a month, I developed a bladder infection that lasted for 5 weeks. I tried every single natural cure, acupuncture, and finally a course of strong antibiotics, and the UTI symptoms would not go away. My body was saying no, even while my heart was saying yes. Once I broke up with him, symptoms cleared up in a week. Riddle me that one, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I am so energetically sensitive, I will literally take on the field of the person I am with. I believe many people are, they just don't know it. There is evidence to suggest that women, especially those having unprotected sex, once you both get tested, people be smart, carry the DNA of male lovers for up to 2 years after a sexual act. This is a reason to be more discerning, certainly not to give in to repression, cultural and psychological, or shame or fear. Simply a listening to one's own deepest needs on both physical and energy level and believing you deserve to have them met no matter how horny you are. So while the physical body wants to play sexually with all manner of people, sometimes the energy body knows better. And I hate that I have to listen, but if I don't, the penalties are too steep. When I don't listen to either my physical or energy bodies, they come to a painful and ugly détente. Thankfully, these now last only a day or less, where it used to take weeks to realize something was out of alignment and cause my then-husband great pain and worry, usually resulting in just upping my dose of meds. Sadder still is that my physical body wanted to stay in that relationship, but my energy body could not take one more minute. This is what I need to remember when nostalgia creeps in and colors the memories sepia. As a sexual intuitive, I read people with compassion, humor, and empathy to help bring out what may be hidden in a secret, dusty room inside their hearts. I have long had a gift to see what someone is into, not into, where to get those needs met, and with whom. It is an honor to be present at someone's unfolding. And in order to do this, the price I pay, if you can call it that, is to live in alignment with my authentic self. And sometimes, sadly for this ethical slut, that means not being able to fuck whom I want, even when they want it too. Lately, my physical body has been saying yes, but an ever more attuned energy body is like, really? That guy? Have you considered how being with him makes you feel, not just inside your glorious vagina, but elsewhere in the places a little harder to see? This is not a comment on someone personally or me personally or any indictment on either of our characters. Just as we must intuit what foods agree with us, whether we can tolerate alcohol or have other allergies, we must be honest with ourselves, and this is no fault of broccoli or beer or Brazil nuts. Even if the sex is glorious, even if I adore him, even if I am hot for every hair on his or her body, when one or both bodies start to rebel, we have to listen. Though I have written about sex a lot, the number of encounters might be lower than you think. I have slept alone the vast majority of the time, even as I went off antidepressants 18 months ago and experienced hideous withdrawal. I went through it all mostly alone. Just because I have access to some power to get laid when and with whom I want doesn't mean I have to use it. And every night as I go to sleep, I reach over and take my own hand. And as I hold my hand, and sometimes lower, I am my own greatest lover. Because from Bryn to the ex-husband, from the ex-boyfriend to all the ex-lays, I realize now that I never was.
Wow. Oh, man. Susanna. How about this, huh?
Deep.
What does it mean, the DNA of a partner, carrying their DNA in your body for 2 years? What do you mean?
You mean literally.
To be frank, once somebody dumps a load in you, they can do a DNA test on your cervix 2 years later, and that DNA is still in there. Hello.
So that would be
hello, DNA.
Very useful in any of the Bill Cosby victims. Oh, I'm just curious. You know, like, I don't know if any are as fresh as 2 years ago, but I didn't know that.
Well,
like, in other words, isn't a rape kit, then would a rape kit be, you know, viable for up to 2 years?
That is an excellent question. And if I was more of a physical body science-based person, I could probably answer that. Hmm. As it is, I'm speaking primarily energetically.
I see.
It takes longer for the energy of that person to leave the body. I do not know physically how long it takes actual sperm to leave your body.
Yeah. Do you ever talk about how many partners you've had, or nobody? Who's keeping track?
Well, I keep track.
Do you actually have a number?
I'm very aware of my number. Yeah,
and
my number is
it?
Not no. My number is not as high as people would think it is. Like, I know women who have slept with like upwards of 400 people, and they're not people that I think of as like slutty. And my number is and slutty's not a bad slutty's an empowering term.
No, you're absolutely
an
right.
Ethical slut.
But it is right. Yeah, saying a man, a man slept with a lot of women is like a compliment, and a woman slept with a lot of men is an insult, and that shouldn't be.
Also, I mean, I'm 50 years old, so if I've been having sex for 35 years or 30 years, if I, you know.
You've probably had people have had sex with hundreds of people. I mean, I was monogamous back when I still thought monogamy was natural. I was monogamous for 14 and a half years.
Right,
minus one
I was
slip.
Monogamous for 12. Right,
right. Which
but you
kind
had
of,
a slip or you didn't?
Oh yeah. I fucked a guy on a yoga retreat.
How many years into marriage? Was
7 years married.
And did you have children?
9 years together.
At that point?
Yes.
So that
and I told him for 6 months. I was like, I am going to fuck somebody if you don't. Up the ante. And so then I did, and then I apologized, and then it was a great resurgence in our sex life after that. But other than that, I was very monogamous, and I didn't flirt with people, and I didn't I kind of put that part of myself on ice a little bit when I was married.
Well, and if you had children too, and so there was like a whole family thing going on? Or no,
it has nothing to do with kids. I'm the kind of woman who can come when the kids are like pounding on the door. Mom, I'm like, shit, I better come quickly. The kids are here.
I see.
I mean, I'm not that girl. My ex-husband, on the other hand, if the fridge is humming too loudly, that will put him off.
Yeah.
So we had like a, that's why I don't like to talk
the
in terms of.
The fridge is judging my erection. Yeah.
If that's why I don't like to talk about men and women. It's more like male energies and female energies, and people are all different. So I don't really think it's about like how many people you've slept with. For example, I was with somebody this year who was around about half my age, which is a high five for me right there. not that I like, we've talked about this before, I don't like the term cougar, I like the term MILF, because I don't, I'm not a predator, I don't consider myself one,
well,
and I'm not one.
But there are women that are, they call themselves cougars, but they don't have children, so they're not a MILF, because they don't have, so they're,
right.
I think that's the cougar where that
but
comes
it's the
in.
Predator, but it's the predatory aspect that I don't like, like you're lying in wait for some fucking child.
I see.
It's like, that's not my paradigm. For me, I don't hunt, I magnetize.
I see.
Anyway, so this young, wonderful hot guy, and he had only literally slept with four people,
wow,
which is low for even his age.
Sure.
And yet he was fantastic. He was great in bed, and it was enthusiasm trumps experience.
Interesting.
So I don't think that there's any objective standard called good in bed.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that I would really like to promote, and one of the things I don't want to promote, say that I'm promoting, is like, oh, you have to be way out there. You have to be that person who, you know, was asking the neighbor to spank you or doing some like way
that.
Out shit. I did do that. But I think what it's
I
about
what
is
she's
owning
saying is being
your...
sexually open doesn't mean you have to like
go
all kinky.
You don't
if that's not who you are.
If that's not your thing.
Yeah, you don't have to go to a dungeon in the valley if that's not what you want to do.
No, because the good ones are in North Hollywood. But
let me ask you something. So let's hear what
you're
going to do.
North Hollywood. That's actually on their slogan, the NoHo Arts District slash dungeon.
Dungeon.
Yeah.
This is what I want to know then. What are you going to do for these folks? They're going to go over to sexualintuitive.com and they're going to say, you know, because I just haven't been that satisfied in my sex life. So let's call Susanna Brisk. And then we find you on your website and you send us a questionnaire. What are the questions?
The questionnaire, I'm not going to go through the exact questions because you really have to come in and ask them. But it's not a long thing. It's really just to identify what it is you want to work on, what kind of fears or hang-ups or what kind of issue you're having. Or maybe you're not having an issue. Maybe you're already having a fairly satisfying sex life, but you have a sense that something is missing. And the main thing is, what is your sensual relationship with yourself? Like, to me, that's what it's all about. Like, people, especially women, are kind of afraid of their own bodies. They don't know what their vaginas look like. They don't know what's going on in there. It's something like 70% of women have never even had an orgasm. And certainly 70% of women have never had an orgasm just from sex, which, again, is fine because everybody is built differently.
Mm-hmm.
But most women don't even – and I'm not – again, I'm not a biologist. But a simple Google search will tell you from what you were saying before, and I know you guys were making light about orgasms or whatever, there are many, many different kinds of orgasms. There are vaginal orgasms. There are clitoral orgasms. There are – what's called a C-gasm, which is when you have an orgasm from your cervix.
Wait, you can have
an osgasm. You can have an orgasm in your mouth.
So we need to back up and break it down.
Let me take the cap off this pen.
Yeah, let's get some notes. Let's take some notes because what are you saying? Every orgasm I've had, it pretty much feels the same. I mean, there's a strength that is different, whether it's stronger or this way, and I can get it different ways, but it still amounts to the same feeling.
Well,
so you're saying she's having one kind and there are other kinds.
Yeah.
Somebody writes to sexualintuitive.com. Is this a single person? Is it a couple? Is it?
It's either one.
Anybody.
It's either way.
Men, women together.
Yes. And orientation, transgender, whatever. It doesn't make any difference. And if you have if you feel like you're more of a what we would call a vanilla person, which is like lights out, socks on, no oral. Five minutes on—that's dirty. I know. I love a good sock on.
It's dirty. It's
reference to German porn
when you switch socks.
Yeah.
Now you're talking.
That's a whole other sock fetish.
That's
a legit thing. Listen, almost everything is a fetish. I will tell you right now, from my exploration, I know this.
What do you do when you Skype with a person or a couple? What is the Skype about?
It's basically a conversation.
Okay, so you're not watching them and maybe helping them in positions or something.
No, no, I'm not one that kind of. I'm not a sex surrogate a sex therapist.
Okay.
But I have found from decades and decades and decades that everybody, all my friends, people I barely know, either talk to me about sex or they text me about sex or they email me about sex. It's like just a thing. People just tell me their sex stuff because there's something about me, I think, that's very open, that gives you permission to be whoever you are. So sometimes that's really all you need, is like that container. It's like you need something reflected back to you. You guys were talking earlier about what are you going to tell your daughter about an orgasm. It's like, it's very, very tricky because as parents, because I am also a parent, and it's very tricky to provide your children and what we weren't provided perhaps when we were little with that echo or that reflection of a healthy sexual relationship with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's up to us to maybe find that in adulthood, because you can't do that. I'm not going to talk about my 10-year-old. You know, I mean, I've told my kids that it's perfectly healthy and natural to masturbate, and whatever feels good to them is good. But at the same time, I don't want them to start associating masturbation with their mom. So
what you've done is ensure that they will never masturbate in their lives. It's like they'll just hear mom's voice going,
no,
it's okay. It's like, all right, I'm not going
to
do this.
I let my kid be obviously as free as she wants to be. And I never even think twice if she, like, I see her in the shower and she takes the little nozzle off the shower thing and I see her, you know, spraying herself, and I love it. Good for her, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, and I not encourage it, but I don't, would never say anything's wrong with that.
Well, there's a way
but
to
I want
do
it to
that.
Be very normal.
There's a way to do that so that you're not imprinting them or connecting yourself with those feelings. There's a way to discuss that with your kids. But again, my expertise is not parenting, it's not love, it's not dating. I'm terrible at all those things. My expertise, and not because I don't know where you could say my accreditation comes from, but I know, and
It's like, you know, the power of attraction, and you know what can perhaps like get two people off. So it's not about, like you said, it's certainly not parenting, and it's certainly not about how you tell children about it.
And it's not an intellectual knowledge.
You're talking about fully grown adults. And what they can do to maybe turn each other on, or maybe you can help people define what they need.
And the biggest thing about that is, like, I was married for 14 and a half years. And if somebody had come to me and said, who was a sexual intuitive, which didn't exist then because I just fucking invented it.
Yeah.
And said, here's a way potentially that you could both get what you want without breaking up a family.
But
like that for me is incredibly,
but see,
incredibly
now you
motivating
know,
and
but
wonderful.
Could somebody have literally told you of something that you would have made your marriage stay together?
If you could have gone back in time and talked to yourself, what would you have told you?
Well, I did try to have an open relationship, which is something that I think would have kept the marriage together. But he was not amenable to that. He's a very traditional kind of person, and I don't think that he could have coped with that. Not because of the idea of me fucking other guys. I honestly don't think that's what would have bothered him. I think it would have had to do with how it was perceived. Mm. Because he's very, he's a traditional guy. He was 15 years older than I am. But
No,
I don't believe that I could go back in time and specifically tell myself something. I would have to go back in time about 7 years. Back before there were really any big problems. And then I would start to say, what are the edges of yourself that you are filing off to stay in this marriage? Why are you taking so many psych meds? Is that a clue for you that perhaps...
Well, Susanna, I mean, I know you. Obviously, we've been friends for a while, and I know it is true. It seems like you were living in this big house in Malibu up on the hill.
Yeah.
And it seems like everything should have been going your way. You've got this handsome, successful husband, two beautiful children.
Yeah.
You are, like, living the dream.
Depressed the shit. Couldn't get out of bed.
Living the fucking American dream.
Couldn't get out of bed.
You're so depressed.
Yeah, couldn't get out of bed.
Wow. That's so sad.
I feel that it has to do some... I definitely feel that it has something to do with repressing sexual energy. You cannot keep that shit under wraps. And some people do their entire lives, and maybe they, in their dying breath, they realize, should have fucked more.
In other words, it's about your meeting your partner's needs and your partner meeting your needs.
It's about getting your needs met.
getting your needs
and, met. And about acknowledging your needs, what your real needs are.
And
what do you really want?
Exactly. And in order to communicate your needs, because a lot of sex experts and sex therapists and sex educators, right? Mm-hmm. They will talk about communicating. Yes, communicating is wonderful, but if you don't know yourself what to communicate, I mean, if you're a woman and you don't masturbate, how on earth are you ever going to tell a partner what
that's
feels
insane.
Good to you?
Yeah, in other words, that's like not knowing who you are as an actor or an actress and wanting the casting director to figure it out. They can't figure it out. You need to tell them what you are. Same thing. You need to know where your orgasm is coming from so that you can tell the person.
Right. And I mean, I would hate to even use the word insane because it's so common. Like, it may not be common amongst the, you know,
our
crazy swingery media people
all
that we
know.
All of
our listeners masturbate. I guarantee you. There is no story-worthy listener out there who's not masturbating.
We have the photographs to prove it.
It's an informal survey. But the thing is that a guy can stay in a darkened room and jerk off to porn for 9 hours and not be any more in touch with who he is as a sensual being.
Does he want to know, though? That's the thing. So you're talking about, now you're talking about a personality type. Do they even care about anybody besides themselves?
I don't think it's about that. I don't think it's about an inherent selfishness. I think that the culture is so warped about sexuality that it's very difficult for men to find their sexual identity.
Or they don't
as
know
well.
It's possible to meet somebody's needs this way.
Right. And having, well, yeah. And it's also, we are all told by society in various ways what we are supposed to be. And men are told what they're supposed to be sexually,
right.
And women are told what they're supposed to be sexually. And like you said about energy, there are men who don't want to be the dominant one, the pursuer all the time.
Right.
And there are women who do. And the both those people are considered quite strange.
And there is a reason why somebody who is a CEO in life will then go and pay a dominatrix to beat up on him in private.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, who you are in life, you may be completely opposite to that. Sexually. In fact, I dated somebody a couple of months ago who sadly I had to let go off my roster, which makes me sad. But
he sent him down to the minors?
I did. I gave him his pink slip.
Why?
What did he do?
Because energetically it wasn't right.
So what was the language you used with him?
Well, most of our relationship was by text, so I really did it by text. But part of the thing about
and
us,
what did you
was
text?
There a lot of
what did you text?
Sexting?
Gotta
was
go.
Was there?
You know what? That's really, like, I'm talking about something much more sophisticated.
You didn't
here
see
than
me do my air quotes.
Thing.
You weren't looking at me.
Yeah, I mean,
he did air quotes. That makes it okay.
Yeah, it makes it okay. Yeah.
Got it. I'm
that's
sorry. I didn't
fault.
Pick up on how meta that was.
I know. I'm so
here's
meta.
The thing. What we were doing was a very sophisticated role play, age play, kind of a BDSM DS relationship. And what was interesting about that is that I'm a very dominant personality. My personality is dominant. And he was a guy that if you met him, and also 28 years old, and if you met him, he was very shy and nervous, almost to the point where, like, not being able to look you in the eye. And then in bed, super dominant. Super, super, super dominant. And we, again, like, how did we know this when we met each other? Well, because I'm a sexual intuitive, I immediately was like, oh, hell yeah. And why am I
why
talking about this?
Why did you let him
this?
Go?
I'm
My
crying.
Point is, why is he no longer in your Rolodex?
Yeah, what was the what was the part that didn't work?
Because the physical body and the energy body, like I said before, have different needs. And just because you have amazing sex with somebody doesn't mean that they're contributing something to your life.
Okay, so what was he not?
And then sometimes, on the other hand, sometimes just because you're with somebody who contributes a lot to your life, and then sexually you may not be a
right.
match, and then like how do you negotiate all those things? And sometimes you think about all the possible ways. And for me, I'm into polyamory. Again, I'm not advocating some kind of
what's
like
that?
Sexually alternative lifestyle. Polyamory means loving many.
Oh.
It's the alternative to monogamy.
I see.
Which is one boring fuck for 50 years. Good luck with that, America. these are just my opinions. Like, that doesn't mean that that's what I advocate
but
as a sexual
come,
intuitive when
right.
I work with clients.
Because when people come to sexualintuitive.com, you're not telling them to go out and sleep around. No, of course not.
Not even remotely. But I'm just saying it might take one little quarter of a degree turn to
right.
the right or to the left to
right.
completely change the trajectory of a relationship that maybe wasn't going to work or isn't doing so well. And it's not always necessary to let go of the person. I just happen to, again, because I'm very energetically sensitive, and I think a lot of people are. A lot of people are empaths who maybe don't know they are, and they just walk around kind of feeling like shit all the time, and they don't know why they feel crappy. And it's because they have people have sensory issues. They have all kinds of stuff that society just tells you, you have to be a certain way. You have to be able to go into Chuck E. Cheese and enjoy all of that overstimulation, and you will enjoy it. And that's what you do because you're doing that for your children. It's like some of us are not fucking built that way. We're not wired that way. So I think you have to respect your own wiring, and that includes sexually and sensually. If you are in touch with who you are, what you want, and getting your needs versus your wants. Because you might want 20 Playboy bunnies to come and blow you every morning, but that doesn't have anything to do with your needs. What are your real fundamental deep needs? I'm 7 years old. I'm asking another little girl to spank me.
Yeah.
That's a need.
I can't believe you kissed a boy at 8 years old.
Yeah, I know. Neither can my kids.
Yeah, my little girl's eight. Hey, what I do like about
your
message.
My kids are horrified by that.
Yeah. How much do they know, by the way, about you? Your
very
children?
Little.
Yeah. But soon they're going to be
they're
able to Google
interested.
Malibu Mom. But
they
but
can
they,
already. And but they're not interested. Okay. If my children are not repelled like fire from my sexuality, then I'm not doing
it
right.
Not
we
doing
have
it
bigger
right.
problems.
Yeah.
You know, my kids could not could not be less interested in the fact that mommy writes inappropriate things on the internet. That's basically all they know.
Yeah. Well, what I like about, though, is that you're able to separate out your independent self from being a mom, from being, I don't know if you're a sister or you're a daughter or
only
whatever.
Only child.
And, oh, you were an only child. But you're able to separate out because being a mom has nothing to do with your sexual being when you're apart from your children.
No, but I've had men call me mommy. And I've called guys daddy.
But that's in a role play. That's not
a different kind of game. Yes.
Let me
not
ask you, what is
energy.
An unfolding? What is an unfolding?
It's what I would call an awakening. Some people call it like a kundalini awakening.
I see.
And you see women who've like never, women or, I mean, it's unlikely that a man has never had an orgasm, but women or men who have an experience where they feel like they were sexually asleep and now they're awake.
Now they're awake
and a lot of it comes through. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful resources that I can point people to in terms of sacred sexuality and embracing your inner goddess and all these different things. But those people are a little bit precious for me. I'm a little bit more dirty than that.
What about tantric sex?
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically a kundalini awakening has got to do. It is associated with tantric sex. That is one pathway to a sexual awakening.
I just don't want that one.
Listen, I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Okay,
but
the three-way you're having with Rafael Nadal and Neil Young, we're adding Sting.
Yeah.
So now it's a four-way.
Right. That's
okay.
Exactly right.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
The thing that's the problem with sacred sexuality and all of those people is that they're very precious about it all. They're very like, oh, it's like your lover and he's going to take you to the greatest heights of whatever, whatever. And it's like, I'm more like, dude, if you're into clown porn, then how can we get that
I'm
incorporated
so upset right now.
Into your sex life to make you...
No. Tell me
I'm
there's
Googling
no clown
right
porn.
Now.
Are you joking?
Please tell me there's no clown porn.
You could put every word in
I'm
the dictionary
so
and put the word porn after it, and
exactly.
I assure you
but
it exists.
Susanna, this is good.
Yeah, she is
well,
not a fan of the
clowns. You have
clowns.
A thing against clowns,
I
but that's
do.
All right. I mean,
let me ask you something. Yeah. Why don't you do phone sex? I bet you'd be real good at that.
Because I'm not a sex worker.
I see.
And I made a decision a while ago when I was considering all my options. I was like, should I be a webcam girl? Should I be a sex worker? Should I go be an escort? Should I, like, I thought about all the different things.
Because you'd be great at that.
Yeah, and I'm very interested in sex. And that's why I'm very, very psychic about people when it comes to sex. But that's because that's what I'm interested
in.
What
are you looking at, Hannes? What are you thinking?
She's thinking that I just found this video for you. Horny midget sucking clown at party.
I'm going to cry. That's not
wow,
funny.
Wow, that's a big deal.
I'm upset.
Well, it only looks like it because she's a midget.
That's another thing that men have such a thing about the size of their dicks. And I just want to be like, dude, it's okay. Like, it is not a big issue. It's not.
Okay. Hey, listen, man. Want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Absolutely. I'm in.
That music. music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Okay, the wheel landed on passport, which is, funnily enough, the central part of when I ran away from home. It was a few years ago. My kids were 2 and 3, and I decided that I was going to run away from home. I was going to run away from my then husband and children, which may have been a sign that perhaps things weren't quite in alignment in my life besides the sleep deprivation. So I got into my car, and I drove down Pacific Coast Highway. And I was like, I'm leaving home. And I packed like underwear and some moisturizer. So clearly I wasn't really thinking clearly. And then my gas was looking kind of low. And so I pulled off the highway and I realized that I had run out of gas. And my plan up until that point was that I was going to check into a hotel, wash my hair, and then come home, get my passport, and go live in Sydney, Australia, which I never even – that's not even where I grew up. It was somewhere else. I was just going to go and do coke with people in Sydney, and I was going to go and get my passport and leave my family. And thank God, for some reason, I ran out of gas in the middle of the road, and a police officer came up to me and said, do you know where you are? And I said, I don't, but I'm going home.
Oh, wow. Wait a minute. I didn't hear anything about a passport.
She was going to go home and get the passport.
Oh, you were going to get the passport. I see. Wow.
I put it in there.
And this is in your book, I'll Be the Death of Me.
Yes.
And that's a fantastic book because how do you say it? You 51-50'd yourself.
I did. I 51-50'd myself. Yes, I've been to psych wards a couple of times. Thank you.
But you're, no, but listen.
Emotionally unstable.
Tip your attendant.
No, but this
emotionally
is
unstable, but sexually intuitive.
But what I like so much about you, you've been through the ringer, you have a past, and you've learned from it, and you move forward. No, but
yes.
It's fascinating about you, because it's a whole body of your life.
Well, most people aren't as radical as I am. Like, if something's a little off in their life, they don't immediately feel suicidal. But for me, it's like the messages come very intensely.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way for me to be inauthentic without then coming to a complete standstill, and so I feel like I can then use that to help other people.
You are an intuitive on many levels.
Yes, I am in some ways too intuitive.
Well, listen, we thank you so much for coming today. And
thank
again, you.
You
can find her, you guys, over at sexualintuitive.com and, of course, on Twitter at MalibuMom1.
Yes, and on Instagram at The MILF Code.
The MILF Code, there you go.
So thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate
it.
Very
you.
Exciting.
Thank you guys.
All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Sean Merrick, Roddy Swearingen, and of course, Andrew Steven. Thank you so much. And of course, I'd like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he did our theme song, Storyworthy.
Yes, he did. He was naked while he wrote it. Bring the clown mask.
And of course, on behalf of Susanna Brisk, our storyteller tonight, and of course, on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
That made no fucking sense whatsoever. No fucking sense at all.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here. and it's funny. And I love you.